Hey guys, it's Robin, and time for a couple of ad reads. This is going to be fun. For a noticeably smoother shave, join Dollar Shave Club today. The Dollar Shave Club starter set includes razors, prep scrub, shave butter, and post-shave dew, all for just $9 on your first box. That's right, just $9. And the best part? Your box gets delivered straight to your door with free shipping. See why millions trust Dollar Shave Club for all their shaving and grooming needs. Get shaving and grooming products when you need it. Don't wait. Get the Ultimate Shave Starter Set from Dollar Shave Club today for just $9. This offer is limited to U.S. residents only. Just go to dollarshaveclub.com/FWCARS. That's dollarshaveclub.com/FWCARS. Look, I think we all know keeping clean is important, and that's from head to toe and everywhere in between. And for guys, there's some important parts right in the middle that really deserve more care than just a bar of soap. For the critical cleaning and grooming, the folks at Ballsy are here to help. A one-stop shop for all your fiddly bits, Ballsy carries trimmers as well as aptly named ball wash, sack spray, and more. And worry not, Ballsy is made from the good stuff. Essential oils and plant extracts, no sulfates, parabens, synthetic dyes, and of course, no testing on animals. And it's made right here. All Ballsy personal care products are proudly produced in the USA and always will be. But perhaps you're not sure where to start. All good, because all you need to do is go to ballwash.com, scroll down, and take the quiz and get a customized system tailored to your personal needs. Or just grab what's called the Sack Pack, a trifecta of products to keep it all neat and tidy. It doesn't matter if you're shopping for yourself or an unkempt loved one, because Ballsy also sells a wide variety of gift sets to fit your needs and budget. With over 200,000 satisfied customers and a 30-day money-back guarantee, you've got to give Ballsy a try. And I gotta tell you, I've tried and loved the two-headed trimmer from Ballsy, and I gotta admit, it's kind of fun to have products catered to my quite private privates. I came up with that myself. To join in on the fun, but, you know, like on your own, go to ballwash.com/FWCARS and put in the promo code FWCARS. You'll receive 20% off your order of $50 or more. That's 20% off when you go to ballwash.com/FWCARS and put in the promo code FWCARS. That's right. Fun with cars. Let the show begin. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 330 of the Fun with Cars Motorsports Podcast, or episode 17 of 2022. I'm Robin Warner, and I'm laughing because I just got through those ad reads for a second time. And today, I'm going to talk about the Detroit Grand Prix IMSA race and share my interviews with the drivers from Wayne Taylor Racing, Meyer Shank Racing, and Paul Miller Racing. It is Thursday evening, June 9th, and let's jump in. In the final race to be held at Belle Isle, it was an all-green flag 100-minute sprint with 6 DPI cars and 10 GTD cars going all out. LMP2, LMP3, and GTD Pro classes did not race this weekend, so it was a pretty limited field, but that meant there was less room, less traffic, and higher chances of green racing, and it was all green racing. Chip Ganassi Racing and Sebastian Bourdais took Cadillac to pole position for the race, but Acura was right behind, with Meyer Shank Racing starting second and Wayne Taylor Racing starting in third, followed by three more Cadillacs. And that's actually a pretty big surprise, considering where both Acura teams, Meyer Shank Racing, Wayne Taylor Racing, thought they'd be. And let's hear from them about it. Both my interviews happened before the race and before qualifying even, so I will first play the interview with Wayne Taylor Racing's Ricky Taylor and Philippe Albuquerque, and then immediately jump into my interview with Meyer Shank Racing's Oliver Jarvis and Tom Blomqvist. Philippe Albuquerque, Ricky Taylor, drivers of the number 10 Conoco Minolta Acura ARX05 race car. How are you guys?
Yeah, we are great.
We're good. Happy to be in Detroit.
So, Ricky, you and I talked a little while ago, and it was ahead of Laguna Seca, and we had a real nice conversation about downforce and all these kinds of things. You've since won both Laguna Seca and Mid-Ohio.
It was a good tough run before Laguna, and I think we emphasized how important those style of racetracks were for our season because of how our car suits the smooth, fast tracks where we can really put a lot of downforce on the car.
That's exactly right.
And up until that point, the approach with the BOP was more one set up for the season, where we came into Detroit thinking that maybe we would need some help on a bumpy, slower track like this. But we did get a little bit of help. We got 15 kilos after Mid-Ohio to anticipate our performance here. So I wouldn't say we're as out of it as we had expected from last year. So we're still in with a shot.
Well, that's great news. I know that in the Cadillac era, you guys were always really strong here. But, now that you have this Orica-based car, it's a different story. But how did the car feel this morning?
Well, we felt pretty good. I mean, but I think it's early days. I mean, we don't know the fuel of everyone going on. I mean, Ricky did a great job on the FP1 because he put the car in P2 only like a tenth off from the fastest car. So we are looking good, but, especially street course, we need to see after the IndyCar goes around because it rubbers the track. Supposedly, it should be better for us with more rubber. But again, we need to do our steps, learning the car and go better. Just today in FP1, we went like a full second quicker than last year in FP1.
Oh, wow.
So, which is impressive. And it's a little bit the trend of Long Beach that we had. Like, we went two full seconds this year than last year. So, whenever we go faster, we go more into aerodynamic car, so it's better for us. But again, the Cadillacs are a great car in here, so we need to see how close we're going to be. Maybe we're a little bit closer, maybe we're going to still behind them. Who knows? Let's wait and see.
Yeah, of course. And what do you think? I mean, it seems like because it's just a 100-minute race, strategy plays such an important role. How much of that part of it are you guys thinking about? Outlaps, in-laps, pit strategy, those types of things.
Yeah, so far this weekend it looks like I'm going to be qualifying the car, so we have two very different jobs. We're going to prepare me as well as we can for qualifying. I get the new tires, I get to go on low fuel and do qualifying simulations. Philippe has the big job this weekend where I could be getting out after 15 minutes potentially, and he might do the rest of the race, but even though it's just 100 minutes, it puts even more emphasis on doing the details right. The strategy, there's a potential for a fuel race, the one or two pit stops that he's going to do, has to nail the in and out laps, because track position here is so important that you don't know if you're going to get another opportunity. So we really have to focus on all of the little details.
Right. Well, you guys are coming off of a pair of very strong races. You got the momentum back. You got the championship back. So best of luck to you in Detroit this weekend.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I'm very happy to be talking to the full-time drivers of the number 60 Meyer Shank Acura ARX DPI car. And I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves so I don't screw up the pronunciation.
Yeah, good man, because even I can't get it right. My name's Tom Blomqvist. I'm one of the drivers for the number 60 Meyer Shank Acura.
I'm Oliver Jarvis, obviously also driving for Meyer Shank in the Acura.
And Tom, you're fascinating. You're the younger of the two drivers. This is your first season in a DPI car here at IMSA, but you've got lots of experience all over the world. Not only do you have experience all over the world, you have nationalities all over the world. How are you at the same time British, Swedish, and a Kiwi?
Yeah, I'm definitely a bit of a cocktail. Well, let's simplify. Well, I was born in the UK. My mother's British. I'm half Swedish because my father's Swedish. And I moved to New Zealand when I was about 6 years old and basically did all my schooling and grew up there. And I moved back to Europe again in 2009 when I was 15. So take it how you want. It's not the most straightforward ones. It's actually a bit of a hindrance for me because I'm neither here nor there.
Yeah, well, it's nomadic in a sense, but they're all great countries to be a part of, so you've got options.
I've got options, yeah. It all depends on the sports, right? Like a bit of rugby, obviously New Zealand, a bit of football, the British. So yeah, I've got a bit to choose from.
Just real quick, soccer. But yeah.
Soccer, whatever, man.
Yeah. You know how it is. I just have to say.
Soccer.
Could not imagine you on a rugby pitch.
So anyway.
I used to run pretty fast from the ball, though.
Mr. Jarvis, you definitely do have DPI experience because you spent a good amount of time at Team Yost with the Team Mazda, you competing against this car back when it was a Penske. So is there anything that feels weird about kind of being with the enemy of sorts?
Yeah, so originally Team Yost and then Multimatic for the last few years.
Of course, I should have clarified. That's right.
Yeah, it's definitely different. You look at other cars out on track and you wonder what it'd be like to drive them and finally getting the chance to do so. But it's great to be in the Acura, fantastic car. And, you know, we've had a really strong start to the year and, you know, it shows what a strong package it is.
Well, it's hard to get much stronger than your start. And I want to get to that in just a moment. But I am curious because Multimatic was kind of a unique setup. A lot of the teams were more Orica-based. And also, you guys were alone when you were at Mazda to have a 2-liter four-cylinder engine. So has there been just some, from a driver point of view, from power delivery, switching to a larger displacement V6 as opposed to that 2-liter four-cylinder, has that been beneficial or just different? How has that adjustment been?
I mean, I have to give credit to the team and NAER. They really sorted that little engine out. But it was definitely a difficult power unit to work with. We had reliability issues at the start. We finally resolved them. But it definitely had its negatives, you know. Didn't quite have the torque of this bigger engine. So, you know, moving across, I've definitely felt a difference. It's just got so much more torque. The power delivery is better. Better TC and control. So, you know, from that side of it, things, it's nice to see what the competition had for all those years.
Absolutely. Now, I am curious, just one more kind of culture thing to brush on. What's it like to have a couple of Brits, you're a Brit now, Tom, with your warm, bitter beer and everything else, having a team from Ohio and an owner that likes Busch Light? How's that adjustment been?
I feel like I'm more adjusted to the American way of life, having been out here for 4 years. But no, I love the fact the team, you know, Mike's great. You know, he likes his beer. That sits well with me. So it's a great environment here. Really friendly, family-orientated, and a lot of fun.
So, Tom, you got into this team.
We bring the banter, though. We bring the British sense of humor.
Yeah, and the bad sense of humor.
Yeah, the toilet humor.
Funny.
No, it's...
We laugh at ourselves. That's right. At least
let me tell
laughing.
You something just briefly. I love Formula One, and I love tea, and I also love fish and chips. So you're a friend here. You guys started off fantastically well, Tom. Your first race with the team was a win. At the 24 Hours of Daytona, not only a win, but the marquee event.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't have started off in a better way. I guess if you're going to win a race, you want to win that one, right? So, absolute dream start, probably the highlight of my career to date. So, you're very thankful for that. But yeah, obviously, you know, that emotion stays with you for a few days, but then you quickly, unfortunately, get over it, and you're focusing on to the next challenge, which is obviously the rest of the season. So, yeah, it's been a decent season for us. You know, close with the 10, you know, out front there. So we just got to keep chipping away. But yeah, so far so good, and it's been great fun as well.
And that's been kind of the other side of it. It's been the Penske team, the Penske cars, split into two different teams, Meyer Shank and Wayne Taylor Racing. And so you guys share a car to a degree, but then in a way you're kind of teammates, and what you want to do first and foremost is beat your teammate. So how has that relationship been, having a different Acura with a different team?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've made great, you know, this car's obviously been around a few years, but I think both teams have really taken it to the next level now, and I think the car is performing really well, the best it has been in seasons gone, which is a credit, you know, testament to both, you know, to MSR and obviously WTR. But yeah, you know, it's difficult, right? Because there's not many team orders anymore or anything like that. You know, it's difficult to work together. on setup and things like that. But they're still the brand sister car, so you have to take care of them and as well in the race. So it's definitely, there's some pros and cons for sure. But hey, we're dealing with it, you know, in a good way, I think, in a fair way. And yeah, I think it's enabled both teams to push each other on to get more, you know, extract more performance from the package.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Oliver, you've raced in DPI for a few years now, have you said? What has experience taught you about the IMSA series and being in these cars? What are you learning over these years, getting to know this the series and these cars?
I think the cars are very similar to what we drive in Europe in P2 and even P1 to an extent. I think the biggest difference is the racing out here. You know, in Europe, if you're half a second quicker, you'll win the race by 30, 40 seconds quite comfortably. Whereas out here, you know, with all the yellows and the way they pack the bunch up, you can never rest. You know, you're always under pressure. The other thing is the cold tyres. That's a skill in itself. You know, middle of the race, going out on cold tyres and pushing hard from that very first lap. In Europe, we have tyre warmers. Makes life that much easier. Also, the tracks out here, a lot less forgiving. I love them, if I'm honest. You know, we're here... Here in Detroit, you've got Wolves, but also, you know, your Mosports, Watkins Glen. These are proper driver's circuits, and, you know, they just bring a smile to your face. And one where I feel the driver can make the difference. You know, you can take risk, you can find lap time, but you can also end up in the wall.
Yeah, absolutely, especially if you're on cold tires, as you said. And do you find that this kind of racing is more satisfying in that sense?
Yeah, very much so. It's more satisfying, and it... Because it's more intense. You know, when you get out in a car, you know, you've really worked hard. Whereas, you know, I love racing in Europe and the WEC, but it depends how that race develops. You can end up leading it by 20 seconds and, you know, you've just got to bring the car home. That's never the case here. You know, you can never rest. You've always got to expect the unexpected. And, you know, it certainly keeps you on your toes. And when you get out of the race car, you've definitely, you know, you've worked hard and you know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tom, you know, up until very recently, your experience was in Europe. What has been the biggest adjustment for you so far?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully I had an idea because I was here in 2019 in the GTLM. So I had an idea what to expect, which, I mean, prepared me quite well for the style of racing and just the mentality difference and the approach to racing, because it's very, very different to Europe. But I think, like Ollie touched on, it's a lot more intense, the racing side of things. And there's a lot more that can go... You're never really out the race, which is, as a driver, it's exciting. And it's, you know, there's always a chance, let's say. If you're not really on it in terms of pace, you know, you still have the chance to get a result, which is good. But yeah, just there's so many differences. I mean, it's just the style of racing is completely different. The way the teams approach the weekends is a little bit different as well. And yeah, so there's all those little things to get your head around. But to be honest, you know, having the year here a few years back, you know, prepared me quite well for that.
Very good. So you guys are on what started as an Orica chassis, and the Cadillacs are running something different. The Cadillacs tend to be stronger at the bumpier places. This is a bumpy place. How are you guys coping with that? Is there a way to stay competitive with Cadillacs here in Detroit?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's no secret that our car is less suited to a track like this, and it plays into the strengths of the Cadillac. So yeah, we just have to compromise a little bit on setup to make sure we keep the compliancy there. Which, you know, our strengths are aerodynamics, so we need smooth, fast corners. Obviously here we have a lot of bumps and stuff that upsets our aero platform, and the traction and stuff like that is less good. So we just have to, you know, work around that. But yeah, so far it's we've been kind of there or thereabouts. So it bodes well, you know.
And Oliver, do you have has experience taught you anything about this place where you can kind of tighten that gap up a little bit? You know, a couple of tricks, a couple of nice little spots where you can cheat the apex a little bit, just get a little bit more radius out of corners.
I think for me also, I mean, I know the circuit, but it's also a learning experience with the car. And you know, as Tom said, we're just trying to maximise the package we've got. The Cadillac definitely has strengths around here, but it's important that we make the most of our car's strengths, which Tom touched upon, is the aerodynamics. So, you know, we're focused on that, but also trying to eke out every little bit of mechanical grip in the slow stuff. And, you know, we're closer here than we were in Long Beach. It's slightly higher speed here, which helps us. So I think qualifying is going to be very tight indeed. I think, you know, it's going to come down to a tenth or two. And round here, you know, a driver can make that difference. So we're still in the fight, even though we talk of it as a Cadillac circuit. We're not far away, that's for sure.
Well, but that's the other interesting part of that is this is a very short race. It's an endurance race that's more often than not shorter than the IndyCar race going on in the same weekend. In laps, out laps, pit stops are critically important. So how do you look at that part of the race?
To be honest, up until now, we kind of focus on getting the balance and qualifying. And then once qualifying's done, we'll look at strategy. But, of course, every time you're in the car, you're paying attention to your out lap, your in lap, because these are crucial in IMSA. You know, they're going to make or break your weekend. If you lose 2 seconds on an out lap, that could be one or two places. And, you know, it doesn't matter how quick you are. Once you're behind on a track like this, it's very difficult to overtake. So there's going to be a lot of strategy involved tomorrow and just making sure we get the maximum out of everything we can control. And then the rest is going to be up to the pace of the car.
Now, you two seem to be pretty similar in size. Does that make it a little bit easier to set up the car in terms of comfort? You don't have to worry too much about someone getting a bigger pad. Now we're getting a shoulder contest.
I've got a big ass. So
maybe Tom's hat has popped up a little higher.
I've got a big ass, so Tom has to have a baby seat to sit in my seat.
I got no hips.
Yeah, I've got definitely a good backside on me, and Tom's pretty skinny all the way down. So
you showed Tom Jazzercise or maybe some of the intensive training we have here in the States?
He needs to start squatting. He needs to get some big weights on that barbell and start squatting.
Well, let's start getting him some double cheeseburgers instead of some salads. Yeah,
it's not the food.
he does try. He's one of these lucky people that can't put weight on.
Oh, yeah. One of those people you always feel so bad for.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's just awful. All right, so you've got Detroit. You got the challenges there. How do you guys feel about the rest of the season? And where do you think you'll be the strongest?
I think, first of all, got to focus and get through Detroit and maximize the points we can. But certainly we've got some good tracks coming up. Watkins, Mosport. Then you've got Road America, Petit Le Mans. You know, if we can come away from here with good points, stay in touch with the 10, I see no reason why we can't have a really strong end to the year and, you know, definitely fight for that championship win.
Oliver, Tom, thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was great to talk to all four of them. Had a lot of fun with Ricky and getting to know Philippe a little bit. And Oliver Jarvis and Tom Blomqvist were actually a lot of fun to chat with. So I really enjoyed both of those. Okay, in the GTD class, the starting grid was led by Vassar Sullivan, who seemed to have the edge with their Lexus RCF GTD car. They were followed by the Heart of Racing team Aston Martin Vantage GTD, and then Paul Miller Racing's BMW M4 GTD. The lead driver for Paul Miller is Brian Sellers, and I got a chance to talk with him as well. Again, we talked before qualifying and the race, but let's hear from him now.
Brian Sellers, driver of the BMW M4 GT3 car in IMSA. How are you, man?
I'm great. It's good to be back at Detroit. This is one of Paul Miller Racing's favorite events. We love coming here. A little bit sad that it's the last weekend at Belle Isle before they move it downtown, because I think this is it's one of my favorite tracks we get to go to. But, you know, you just try and enjoy the last time we're here. Hopefully make some good memories.
Well, you're absolutely preaching to the choir when it comes to that. It's a great event, and the work that Penske did to just improve the facilities has been fantastic. Turn it into a great race place. But you've had a pretty darn good racing season, despite the fact that this is a brand new car.
Yeah, it's been very strong. I mean, we've been very fortunate that BMW has delivered such a good product right off the boat. we have been able to just kind of take possession of it, go through it, and do our prep work and roll it to the racetracks. And it's been fast, and it's been good, and it's been reliable. You know, we're starting to run into some issues as we get into the meat of the season at places like this where we haven't been with the car, where the car hasn't been tried and tested. And the other cars have been here for a few years now. So we have some ground to make up, and we have a lot of things to learn. But I think when you look at the new M4, it's hard to be anything but impressed with what it's done worldwide.
Well, I wanted to ask you what it was like to be in Daytona with a brand new car, because in years past you've been driving Lamborghinis and winning in Lamborghinis, but you didn't get to go to Daytona this year. How much of a bummer was that? I mean, there's excitement for a new car, I'm sure, but...
I mean, it is a complete bummer. Daytona is our pinnacle event, and you want to be there. But it was also a sacrifice we had to make to get this new partnership that we had. So, you know, for the program, it was the right thing to do to get everyone to take a step back, prepare to get the BMW in the shop so that when we went to Sebring, we'd be 100% ready to go. And it's tough watching other people race in a race that you should be in.
So talk to me a little bit. I mean, because on the road, Huracan Lamborghini would smoke a BMW M4. Obviously, that's not the case on the racetrack. How are the race cars different from each other between the Lamborghini GT3 and this one?
Well, I mean, the race cars are polar opposites, to be honest. I mean, there are more differences than there are similarities between the two. I would say maybe the only similarity between the two are that they're both classified as GT3 cars. The Lamborghini, I would say, feels like a much smaller, much more nimble race car. And it feels lighter to drive. However, the BMW is actually the lighter of the race cars at the
moment. No kidding.
Yep. But the BMW...
And is that... I'm sorry to interrupt, but is that just a matter of BOP?
It's a BOP issue. But the BMW is longer, wider, a little bit slower to respond, a little bit lazier to react. But because of its size, it also produces a lot more aerodynamic grip.
No kidding.
It's, you know, good, I think, very good in the torque and straight line speed delivery. So the car will only continue to get better as we have it in our hands and work through development.
Well, as we see, you were strong out of the box, and I would almost say dominant at Long Beach, where you guys were ahead of the pro cars, you guys were ahead of a lot of the prototypes. I mean, you guys were just on it there.
Yeah, I mean, with places like Long Beach, Detroit, street circuits where you have limited time and limited availability, it's more about how the car rolls off the truck than anything. And if you can roll off the truck strong and work on just like fine-tuning your driving techniques, then the speed continues to show up. But if you're chasing car balance or lap time, it makes it a long weekend. The opposite happened to us here. You know, we rolled off and we don't feel great. So we'll see how our adaptations come for the next session. Fortunately, the sessions here are quite long, so you have time.
Yeah, that part is good. And I was ready to give you like 90% of the credit for being fast at Long Beach. So you're trying to give credit to the car. So
it's to the team. I mean, these races are to what the guys do, the preparation behind the events for them, getting the car ready to go and just knowing that it's going to last, it's going to survive, and that we're going to be in the window is what's important.
What about being inside the car? How is that different than a Lamborghini?
Well, the ergonomics inside are completely different. The button layouts, obviously, are different. The seating positions are all different. But that's one of the things that I think manufacturers have done a great job with over the years as the cars have progressed, is putting a priority on the interior, having everything accessible for the drivers in the right place, all within arm's reach. And BMW has done a phenomenal job with that, with just the interior. And, you know, you just can't say enough about the product that they've put into place.
So you jumped into the car and you're comfortable and you're winning races. Well, Brian Sellers, thank you so much for taking the time to talk. Good luck this weekend in Detroit. I hope that you guys adapt quickly.
My pleasure. Thanks.
As always, 1,000 thank yous to Brian Sellers. Great, great guy. So you wouldn't know it by looking at the results, but it was a fast-paced, action-packed race with lots of great passes and attempts at passes that really kept you on the edge of your seat. In the end, though, it was Chip Ganassi that held on and won the final Detroit Grand Prix of Belle Isle for Cadillac, followed by Meyer-Shank Racing in second, and then it was actually another Cadillac, the second Chip Ganassi car, driven by Earl Bamber and Alex Lynn, that took the final step on the podium. Wayne Taylor Racing and Wheelan Engineering Racing were the only two DPI cars that had to pit twice. They settled for fourth and sixth, respectively. Actually, though, Wayne Taylor Racing crossed the line fifth, but it was a post-race inspection infraction on another car that moved them up a slot. In GTD, the top three cars finished where they started, with the Lexus first, Aston Martin second, and Brian Sellers in the BMW finishing third. But again, they were all super tight with each other, and it was really interesting to see how the different classes had to pass or get passed by the other classes and how all that played into it. So it really was a great race. And for anyone interested, I included the highlights of that race, the YouTube highlights on that race, in the description of the podcast, so you can check it out there. Okay, so this coming weekend is a huge, huge weekend of racing. We've got Formula One going to Azerbaijan for the Grand Prix June 10th through the 12th. IndyCar is at my favorite track in the United States, Road America. They're there June 10th to 12th. IMSA has a couple of weeks off. Their next race is the 6 hours of the Glen. That's Watkins Glen of Formula One fame. They're racing there on the 26th of June. But also this weekend is the 24 hours of Le Mans from the 11th to the 12th of June. And so we've got tons of great, great racing coming up. And obviously in the next coming couple of weeks, Chris Roche and I will have plenty to talk about as well. But maybe you won't care. Maybe you'll be too busy watching my YouTube videos. So the last podcast I put out just a few days ago, that was the IndyCar stuff where I showed my interview with Romain Grosjean and the vice president of Honda Performance Development, Kelvin Fu. This time, it's going to be my IMSA stuff. So it's the three interviews that you also just heard the audio of, but you'll get to see their facial expressions and stuff like that in the YouTube videos, as well as Philippe Albuquerque took the time to give me a walk around of his Wayne Taylor Racing DPI car. And this was with the front and rear bodywork off the car. So we got to take a close look at the brakes, look at the suspension, and I also got to ask him a lot of questions about his cockpit and all the different buttons and switches and all the things going on there. It was a great, great conversation, good video, so I really hope you check that out. But for now, I want to thank you for listening. Please take a moment to review us on iTunes or on whatever platform you get our podcasts. Please leave comments on the episode of your choice by going to funwithcars.com. As always, I can be reached at feedback@funwithcars.com. Tweet us at fun_with_cars. And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/FWCars. I'm Robin Warner. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.